Hello and welcome to the final Albion Roar of 2016 here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham, and we are brought to you with the marvellous assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, in the year that claimed so many celebrities, Albion's star continues to rise. We end 2016 in the top two and are a good bet to finally make it to the land of milk and honey. So today I'm joined by a stellar panel in the shape of Alan Wares, Andy Bass and Marcus Hancock as we look back on a record-breaking year for the Albion. And it has been quite record-breaking, hasn't it, Al?
Yeah, well, I kind of lost my records rather than broke them. No, it's been a fabulous year. I mean, like I say, it's totally conversing to so much in terms of society and politics and personal issues and what have you. The Albion has actually been the kind of shining light of so much of society and so much of our great city. We've had a fabulous year. We're going to go through a whole bunch of stats later in the show. But seeing as we don't actually do our football years in terms of calendar years, we do them in seasons. At the moment, we've got nothing. We're halfway there, but we've still got a job to do.
But Andy, I said there in the intro there that, I mean, it has been a year where there has been quite a lot of seismic change in the world of politics and celebrity, etc. So it's been nice to have something that's actually positive news.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just been absolutely brilliant. I mean, the Albion has just been the main source of joy and happiness, I think, for a lot of people. And it's really genuinely the positive nature, certainly, of what we're going through now in this particular season of 16-17. The sort of utter joy that comes pretty much with every performance, even if we're not playing particularly well, but it's the team spirit, the way that the fans have responded in terms of like selling out the stadium pretty much every week. There's just that feel-good vibe going on, and you can really genuinely feel it flowing through your veins. It's fantastic.
Okay, so today we are going to do our 2016 review. So we're going to go through this month by month, and we're going to reveal our player of the year of the calendar year of 2016, our goal of 2016, and our moment of 2016. So we're going to start, obviously, with January, where we started the year in fourth, following a home defeat to Wolves, in which Connor Goldson made his home debut and scored an own goal against his hometown club. We then got knocked out of the FA Cup at Hull and lost away at Rotherham, and we got back to winning ways at Blackburn and saw out the month by beating Huddersfield at home.
Seems so long ago, doesn't it?
It was also the month, Marcus, where Bobby Zamora scored his last goals for the club.
Was it really?
Yeah.
In January? So his last sort of goal for us was Huddersfield, where he ran the length for the pitch.
Was it that one?
That was his last goal for the club.
Injured himself. It's a hell of a way to sign off,
isn't it?
Really?
Isn't it? I didn't realise that was his last one.
Well, there you go. There's a stat for you.
Isn't it? I've got some stats as well.
I know you have.
You wouldn't believe it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
who knew, yeah.
I think he literally ran out of breath after that goal.
I think we did.
It's a shame he put so much effort in, because we could have done with him in the last three or four games of the season, to be honest with you.
A fact he pointed out, actually, in the excellent interview he did with Adam Virgo a few weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. He said, you know, we missed out on the playoffs. So, I mean, sorry, I know we're jumping from January to May here. We missed out on the playoffs by two goals. He said, I'd love to have been that person to have, you know, even if... Well, the thing is, actually, him scoring a couple of extra goals would have probably meant a couple of extra points, and therefore
Absolutely.
Goal difference wasn't an issue. I mean, that's the way that it works. But
I mean, he did actually score another goal in January as well, which was the winner away at Blackburn.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay,
but, But, I mean, just to put things into context, the team on the 1st of January against Wolves, I'm not going to do this for every game, but only
Please
for the
don't.
First one of the season.
Could take a while.
We start... looking at it, there's not...
Well, tell us then, we can tell you about it.
Huge differences between the team now and the team that should have started in the fog last night. But so, obviously, number one in goal, David Stockdale.
Number 13, actually.
Pedant rights. So, Stockdale, Bruno, Calderon, Dunk, Goldson, Kyle, Crofts, Stevens, Murphy and Wilson, and Zamora was the 11. And then on the bench we had Nicky Mempire, Tomah Hamed, JFC, Danny Holler, Rowan Ince, Adam Chickson and Elvis Munu. So I mean, looking at that now, it's really the bench that speaks volumes, isn't it?
I was about to say that the point you've got there is that the first 11 is you know, largely the same. A couple of people have left obviously since. But yeah, it's the backup that we've now have on the bench that makes the difference as to where we are now, as in comparison to then.
I don't know. I thought that seemed set, that team sounded totally different. I wouldn't even make our reserve side now.
Well, you got what? Hartley about 8, 6, 7, 8 started the game that would have done last night.
Well, yeah, Stockdale, Bruno Dunk, Stevens, possibly Jamie Murphy. Maybe he probably would have been on the bench.
Goldson, if Duffy or
and let's face it, no one has a problem with Goldson starting. It's just obviously Duffy and Dunk have actually formed a really good partnership.
But so, I mean, out of that 11, so obviously Calderon's gone, Crofts has gone. Wilson has gone, Zamora's retired, and then you've got JFC. Well, JFC is still our player. He's still got another 2 years.
Where is he these days?
Is it Rotherham?
He's still at Rotherham.
He's still got another 2 years on his contract. I suspect will go this month or January.
You reckon?
I suspect so. And Chickson, as we know, he's now at
John.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we ended. Think about that.
So we ended January. We were fourth. We were 50 points, which was 6 points behind the leaders, who were Hull at the time, and our goal difference was +6.
So 50 points at the end of January, say.
Yeah.
And we got 51 now. Yes, at the moment, you know, at the beginning of January. Well, it says something, doesn't it?
Does. Okay. Almost
absolutely
safe.
Oh,
yeah. So we then moved on to February. I mean, January wasn't a great month. It was our blip month, really, wasn't it? So we're hoping that's not going to happen.
Well, actually, it was that Christmas period. But then, having said that, it was when we won the third division in 2011. So.
Okay, so February, the month started with a 3-0 home win against Brentford and wins against Bolton, which was 3-2. Emil Heskey, anyone? Then there was a 0-0 draw at Hull, a capitulation at Cardiff, and bounce-back wins at Bristol City.
Did you have a nice time in Cardiff, Andy?
Yes, I did, until I actually... No, actually I didn't. It was a horrible day. Absolutely horrible day.
Just, you're blaming the wind, aren't you? Moist.
I am blaming the biblical weather for that.
Have you ever seen horizontal rain before?
We just couldn't. We just couldn't kick the ball forward in the first half. And the defending was terrible. It was just an absolute afternoon to forget.
Right. Well, we haven't, though, because it's actually a rarity.
Once I dried out about 8 hours later.
I mean, in a season of so many highs, that was a particular low point, wasn't it? And the fact that we conceded 4 goals in that game, I know we could look at
it
other games.
It did for our goal difference, isn't it? I mean, for all the fact you say, there was this moment, there was that moment, actually, so many people have overlooked that moment that we actually lost a 3-goal difference. Mm-hmm. And what did we miss out on in the final reckoning? Yeah. You know, you could point to so many different things. But the swings and roundabouts thing is then the last minute penalty miss that MK Dons did. Mm. And
that was March, and we're moving on to that.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've got a lot to rattle through, haven't we? I mean, it's been such a jam packed year of fun and frolics.
Mm. Are you trying to see how many song references you can get in today?
I don't know that one, actually. I'm just trying to do a lot of alliteration.
Says he again. Okay, so, I mean, it was... we bounced back from that 4-1 defeat with 2 consecutive 4-0 victories, which is... That is some way to come back. So that was against...
Marcus, you looked like you were going to say something, and then you realised it's New Year's Eve. I've got to save myself here, haven't I?
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, two back-to-back. The Bristol City game, I think, was... a welcome after the it was literally straight after the Cardiff, wasn't it?
It was on the Tuesday.
And it literally was, you know, obviously Chris Hughton gave him one of the very few rockets, I think, as a team collectively, as Andy said. As bad as we were against Cardiff, you know, we were magnificent against Bristol City, and arguably that's the game that sort of kicked us on to then go on that run.
Yeah, I also feel it's indicative of the fact that, okay, you know, you have a bad day at the office, and let's face it, we're kind of still waiting for our horror show this year. Mm. If Brentford was it, then hey, we're not doing too badly.
Yeah. Mm.
But, you know, for 4-1 against Cardiff, and it was a stinker, the fact that we can then bounce back with 2 4-0 wins is actually indicative of not necessarily a manager, but you know that it's knowing that the quality is there and how best to get that quality out. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to anyone, but I interviewed Liam Rosina a few weeks ago.
Did you? Really?
Yeah, he did. He did.
He might have
mentioned it. Hang on.
The point is that he's going. He was talking about the togetherness, but also talking about how everyone takes their own sense of responsibility, and in so doing, realizing 4-1 not good enough, dreadful performance. Not acceptable. We've got to do something about it. There's only so much a manager can do. It's the old adage about, you know, once you're over that white line, there's not a great deal they can do. The players took responsibility for it. There wasn't a blame. There wasn't public finger pointing. There wasn't this. There wasn't that. The shouting that Chris Hughton did. He did it in the dressing room. You know, they all say, oh, you know, that's they said, well, I've only seen Chris Hughton get crossed twice, and that was one of them.
Yeah,
I think Rotherham was the other one.
Quite possibly. I mean, the Cardiff game, although we're looking at the team, I did think that Chris may have dropped a slight clangor in the team selection. I mean, it was a long time ago now, but I looked at that team and thought, are you playing for a draw here when you probably need... I don't know. I mean, it's all history now, but
of course, but I think the criticism was...
He did mess with the midfield that
that's
day.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, he sort of dropped Scalic straight in after, and we're like, what? Why is he there and not whoever it was who should have been playing, Murphy or whatever.
Well, moving on then, hindsight's obviously a beautiful thing, and the game after that, which was, again, another 4-0 victory, which was at home to Leeds. Now, we can look back at that one. Obviously, that the two-goal difference that ultimately saw us fail, we could have made that up in that game, because it was 4-0 at half-time, Andy.
Yeah, we just... got bored of it at half time, I think, and we just closed it out. You know what I mean? It does seem a little bit mealy mouthed to say that, but you do wonder that whether we just thought that the job was done, and we just saw the game out. But it was a clinical performance in the first half, and it was and Leeds were terrible.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, we knew that the goal difference was an issue here, and. Okay, like you say, it's easy to be wise with hindsight, so we're going to use that hindsight. But having said, we did say that at the time. We think, well, actually, Leeds are there for the taking. We did take our foot off the throat. Mm. And 5, 6 and 7 weren't totally impossible, because Leeds were absolutely shocking.
They were appalling.
They were bad, yeah. I love the tweet from Michael Vaughan, actually, notorious massive Wednesday fan. He said at half-time, I think Brighton should declare.
Which, in effect, we did.
We did.
But, okay, so we entered February. We're still in fourth. We're on 63 points. 2 points behind leaders Burnley, with a goal difference of plus 15. And I'm going to keep mentioning this goal difference scene, because it was a massive thing for us. And it's something which we're still looking at now, because it was... I'm still finding it very hard to believe. It was just... the amount of points we gained last season, and there was just two goals. But anyway,
if you're going to miss out, you want to miss out by a mile, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
10 points off of.
We can all sort of if we'd have done this, if we'd have done that, and of course, all these things balance themselves out of the year. Mm. Let's face it, because the season is August to May. We were just delighted that we'd actually made a really good start on the back of what was previously a near relegation season.
Yeah,
you know, we were. We didn't expect that season that we had.
2 years ago, because it's Chris Hughton's anniversary, isn't it? And two years ago, we were second from bottom.
Yeah.
I can't remember
really
the points
that,
it was.
That
we
low.
Were really that low. We were second from bottom when he took over. Someone text me the league table at
that
really point.
That really cheered you up, didn't it?
It was, you know. Yeah. Bottom were Blackpool, I think. And
what a car crash they are.
Yeah, exactly. And they'd just beaten us, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, on to March then, and those 4-0 wins were quickly forgotten, as were the two consecutive 0-0 draws, firstly at Preston and then at home to the massive Sheffield Wednesday.
I remember that game. That was the Sheffield Wednesday game, I think, was the two mates for a tenner, and I brought a couple of friends along. They were the Spanish people, and I'm really looking forward to sort of seeing us play. And it was the most appallingly boring game. Yeah. It was shocking. All
but then in March, we did return to winning ways with wins at home to Reading and then MK Dons.
Yeah, it's always nice to beat MK Dons, isn't it?
So two consecutive 0-0s. First one, which was at Preston, Andy, which we were at. We should have had a goal in that game. It was wrongly disallowed.
Yeah, I think we should have had a... I think we should have had a goal in that game, but if Alan thought the Sheffield Wednesday game was bad, he should have been at that one.
Honestly, Preston was a poor. It was as dull as a 0-0 gets. I think
rubbish game.
I'm not going to lie, Andy. We're talking about the fog last night on that one, but our heads were a little bit foggy.
Your heads were very foggy that day.
Who knew?
I know.
But so AD was pickled when?
We haven't used that story much this year. But so we'll move on for those 0-0s. But so Jamie Murphy scored a legitimate goal.
What was wrong with it?
It was ruled out for offside, but it wasn't.
No,
I think that's the benefit of TV replays. Yeah. I must admit that.
Did you sort of disagree or agree with it at the time?
We had the ball in the net twice in that game. One of them was definitely offside, but Murphy's was definitely on.
So. Right. Okay.
But okay.
So these are the things again. That's actually 3 points, or sorry, 2 points we've dropped.
Yeah.
Never mind one goal difference. Yeah. Like I say, it's just so many ifs, and ifs. And like I say, if you're going to lose badly.
Okay, I know we don't really like talking about this particular club, but we're playing them next week, so we might as well throw it in now. And we took 7,000 people to Milton Keynes.
That was good fun, that. Well, they only charged, what, 10 quid or something?
12 quid it was, yeah.
Yeah, and it sticks in your craw when you give them the money. But actually, I think that we were all thinking, well, the support of the lads is actually far more important than our disdain for the club stealers.
Mm. Well, it was a good day because it just shows the enthusiasm that we had for that people had for the club. So obviously, we don't get 7,000 away every game, but given the opportunity to get fairly easy access. Away game, good pricing, and just like people thought, just really believed we could get something out of it. And then the best part of the Milton Keynes experience was all the late goals as we were walking out of the ground and finding out that Wolves had equalised at Hull, I think it was, or something like that. And we'd actually, I think, was that the game we went second?
Well, we finished, that was the last game that month, and we finished the month, where were we, March? We finished... Yeah, second on 71 points, 4 points behind leaders Burnley with a goal difference of plus 17. Yeah.
Sure. The other thing that I remember that you thought was very positive about that thing is you walked past the Marshall's Music Factory.
Yeah, I walked past the Marshall Amp Factory. That's fantastic.
It. Yeah. It's quite
it's thing, quite impressive, isn't it?
It's almost the only reason for Milton Keynes to exist. Some serious amplifiers.
Okay,
Alan, we've reached the end of March. I think it's time for a stat.
Okay, which stats do you want? Let's do discipline. I'm going to get to the... Because I believe, in all the stats that I have actually cobbled together, I think that we've actually broken 5 all-time club records this year, this calendar year.
Well, it's funny you should mention the discipline, because the start of April, they begin with a touch of a discipline issue. So let's go with that.
Okay, well, fine. Guess who got the most yellow cards this year?
Lewis Dunk.
Yeah, Lewis Dunk got 12 yellow cards, which means that when I talk about stats as we go through the show, I'm going to talk about the first half and the second half. What I mean is the first half is the year January to May, and the second part is obviously August to now. So first part, he actually got 3 bookings between January and May, but since then he's picked up another 9.
Really?
Yep. But he's also, and I think it was probably back in the last season, he also got a red card. Who do you think was our next most violent person?
Dale Stevens,
9 yellows this year, 2 red cards. Oh, yeah. And I think this is where it then gets a bit more interesting. Who after that do you believe?
Bruno.
No. Ooh. Step forward, Gaten Bong.
Yeah.
6 yellows, 1 red.
Really?
Yep. And next violent, most violent after that is Anthony Knockhart with 6 yellows. Bruno with 5, Sam Baldock has a yellow and a red to his name, and less than 3 bar that. Now, if there's probably some other stato out there who's saying, but you may be wrong. 1, this is league games only, and 2, if I've got it wrong, I don't care. It makes for good radio to shout out that Lewis Dunk is our most violent player.
So if anyone is listening to this live, please go onto the Albion Rule Twitter and start with the hashtag Alan's wrong.
I would only ever blame... I actually went through... to be fair, I went through the club stuff, soccer base, 11v11, and numbers I made up in my head.
Okay. Well, let's move on to April then. And that started with a visit from leaders Burnley, where the spoils were shared. That was followed by 2 wins on the road at Birmingham and Nottingham Forest. Fulham and QPR were then thrashed at the Amex, and the month finished with another win on the road at Charlton. So, I mean, we've got to start with that game against Burnley in April, and it was all about Joey Barton initially, wasn't it?
Stamp collecting.
Don't.
Yeah, it was... to be fair, I mean, it was actually a good game. It was 2 teams at the top of the table really vying for stuff. We played really well because you think, well, it's Burnley, they look good, they were on parachute payments and yada, yada, yada. And they were good far side, and we matched them. And in fact, we took the lead twice against them. And we showed that, I know it was sort of late in the season, there was only probably half a dozen games left by then, but it showed that we were genuine promotion candidates, and that the teams at the top we could actually match/beat.
I thought it was one of our best performances of the season.
Well, we were lucky to come out of that game with anything, though, Andy. I mean, bear in mind that they had a perfectly legitimate goal disallowed.
Well, if ever there was a season where you could say luck evens itself up, I mean that one. I think we are owed that one, AD, yes. So I'm not really going to moan about it.
Absolutely.
And let's face it, they should have been down to 10 men, shouldn't they?
They should absolutely have been down to 10 men. I think it's as we'll come to the other game where we played, in the northeast of England in a bit.
Yeah.
But as bad as, if that was a sending off all day long, every day long, and the referee was weak. I'm not one for berating referees these
really?
Days. No, I used to, but these days I kind of try and look at it, but that referee was weak because Barton was in his face the whole time. He was nasty. He was fine. He was playing within the rules, and that's exactly how a Sean Dyche side sets themselves out.
Yeah.
He played, but Barton was way over the line, and the referee didn't even give him as much as a telling off.
It wasn't just one.
And then that stamp, my God.
But that wasn't isolated, though, because there was the stamp, there was the elbow.
And the referee was letting him get away with it. The referee in that game was weak, so in a way, I'm glad that their goal disallowed. Because
he was weak. Because the linesman was
probably,
weak.
To be fair, yeah. I mean, the official in that game was absolutely appalling, but the equalising goal is, I believe, the reason why we signed Duffy when Burnley equalised. Because Chris Hughton noticed that there was some gamesmanship from Burnley going on at the corner.
Right.
Either Dunk or Connor wasn't man enough, in inverted commas, weren't cute enough, which is why we went out and bought Duffy on the back of that Burnley game.
You reckon?
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's come from a couple of sources.
All right.
That was the game where Chris said we need another robust centre half to deal with this sort of stuff.
And let's face it, I mean, we have to fast forward to the last game of the year. That flying, crunching, dear God, if he mistimes this, that's the end of the other player's career tackle that he put in against, QPR.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That was Shane Duffy.
Loved it. Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was a boom, wasn't it?
Okay, well,
that's probably what brought the fog down later.
That game was followed by a game that irritated many by being moved to Monday night at the City Ground, and there was late drama at that one, Andy.
Yes, sadly, couldn't go to that game because it got moved.
Oh, of course, yes. You bought your train tickets and everything, didn't you?
The infamous Forest game, which I think spent an hour moaning about that on this very Augusta show.
You can hear that on three episodes of the Albion Roar in our archives.
Was it just three? I think I've been going on about that all year, haven't I?
But actually, we watched that at the welly, and
moaning about Sidwell for 90 minutes, quite literally.
It wasn't an impressive performance, and as the game was winding down, we were kind of resigned to it, like being a disappointing draw, and I mean our dreams of automatic promotion, sort of. Whimper away, and then Sidwell comes up with a last gasp winner. Absolutely,
and was it
a brilliant, an epic strike from all of 7 yards out? It was fantastic.
Well, that was all about Knockhart, though, wasn't it? He came on that game as a substitute, I believe, and he changed the game.
Yeah, he just dragged the players down towards the touchline, leaving the space for Sidwell to tap it in.
Didn't he send a couple of them to the shops for that one actually as well?
Yeah, but that was followed by the biggest win of that season, but not well. It's a joint biggest win of the year, which was at home to Fulham, who were just shocking.
Fulham, did you say?
Yeah.
Actually, again, like the game recently, for the first 20-25 minutes, we couldn't get the ball off them. Mm. Then we scored a first half goal, and then the more recent game, they fell apart in the second half. I think after about 25 minutes in the 5-0, and it's just then, we scored some sort of key goals, at the right time. Header from a corner that looped in. Them moaning an awful lot about a couple of Hemed's goals. So what? And that's actually another thing that was a rarity. I think it was only the second hat-trick of the Amex. Was Hemed's goal, Hemed's hat-trick after Ujoa against Huddersfield. Mm-hmm. Murray came up with one obviously later in the year. We've had a hat-trick of hat-tricks at the Amex nowadays, but yes, that was the second one ever.
Okay, game after that was again another thrashing, this time of their West London rivals QPR, and
one two goals of the season.
Definitely the main contender was obviously Scalak's goal. I mean, I'm still going woof about that now, and it's made even better by Alan Partridge.
We're not going to repeat. Yeah. Well, this is it. It's also it shows up how farcical the notion of goal of the season is, because actually it's the goal of the season less 8 games or whatever it is. Because You know, once
I had to reopen the poll.
Well, Knockhart scored the great free kick at the end of the first half, towards the end of the first half, and they said, "Oh, we're going to reopen it." And then Scalak does what he does, and let's face it, and we can all look back on it because we've all looked at it several times. When that ball dropped down, a really poor header, I think from Grant Hall, and Scalak leaps upon it, the entire West Stand up, or I'd be convinced, was just shouting, "No!"
Speak for yourself.
Before he finally went whack, and we went, yes. How many people really wanted him to shoot, or actually rather than just you're shaking your head on radio, doesn't work, Marcus.
No, I didn't want him to.
And it all happened so quickly, it just sort of happened in a blur, and he just struck it. I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah. And I believe that's where there was some Anglo-Saxon language
from Andy
in praise of the technique
of
that particular
But yeah, I have seen that goal several times this week, funnily enough. And it gets better every time I see it. It is absolutely stunning.
It is. Okay. It is. It's a good job the net was there. Otherwise, there'd been some kiddie in the North Stand would have lost his face.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that was the last game of that month. And we ended the month in third on 87 points. And Borough were top, 1 point ahead. Our goal difference was now plus 33, which is the same as Burnley. So we're caught up. We're pretty much where we were now. So okay, that leads us on to the goal of 2016. Nicely. I mean, some people are saying it's Scalak. Some people are saying it's Sibwell. Some people are saying it's something else. Gentlemen,
right, for sheer quality, Andy.
I think for sheer quality, I personally would vote for Scalak's goal.
Okay.
But again, I have given this some thought this week, and there are so many good goals this season.
Uh-huh.
And all for different reasons.
This year, rather.
And all for different reasons. Some have been brilliant because they were great team moves. Some have been great because they've just been really nice finishes where someone's dinked it over a keeper or just worked it around the defenders. Some have just been just sheer raw power, and then you've got Scalak, which is like a combination of skill and power, and then the Sidwell one, which is just supremely inventive but incredibly well struck. So but my personal flip a coin, I'm going to go Scalak.
Okay,
me.
Marcus.
I agree with Andy. Scalak, the technique, everything. Boom! What a goal! Football pie all over his shirt.
It was more pleasing to watch.
It was, especially from the, as Alan said, especially from no, don't do it. Yeah!
But the thing is, the other thing that when you're talking about the types of really good goals, the other one that I think the other genre you've missed out is the 95th minute winner.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily good, but dear God, do you go potty for them?
Oh yeah, I mean, did at Birmingham. Yeah. I mean, that was incredible.
AD, what's yours?
Well, I mean, I'm. Those ones are obviously in the mix, but I want to throw a few other ones into the ring, as it were. Glenn Murray's against Aston Villa for just the sheer technique on that and the way the goal came about.
It was the only thing we did that game, I think.
Yeah,
anyway,
it was amazing. Sam Bulldog scored two cracking goals this season the other night against QPR.
Yeah.
It was lunchtime, wasn't it? Yeah. And also his the equalising goal against Fulham.
We only score good goals against QPR, frankly, don't we?
Sam Bulldog only scores good goals. If you actually go back and look at his, they're for technique, really, really good finishes.
The first one at Fulham last year wasn't that great.
it was actually a good one. It was a beautiful through ball from Bruno.
All the ones he scored at the Amex then.
Yeah.
But I mean I've got the stats here. I mean, you've got them as well. I've got the top goal scorer of the calendar year was Tom Hamed. I'm including cup goals in this as well. It was Tom Hamed. He scored 16 goals in this calendar year.
14 league, 2 league cup.
That's it. And
I was actually going to put that out to the panel here as to whether they reckon who was winning. But
who's
okay.
second?
Well, it's not going to be that difficult, is it?
Who's third?
Knockout, maybe.
Okay, well, Knockout has got 13.
Yeah, what we've got is league goals only. Murray at the top, Hemed second on 14, although with his two League Cup goals with 16, making the leading scorer of the year. Knockout with 13, and next after that is Sam Baldock on 9.
I know.
Baldock could get done.
That's only eight league goals plus one League Cup goal. Two own goals, which I think was actually more than that. Dunk's got 5. Murphy's got four, but two plus.
Yeah. We're looking at the same stats here.
Yeah, Wilson got 3, Zamora 2.
Stephen's got 5.
Loa only won this calendar year.
I think, you know, great servant, yada, yada, yada. I think Loa's time is coming to an end, isn't it?
Okay, yeah, well, so. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And our thanks, as always, go out to the sponsor of this show, without whom it would not be possible, which is, of course, Phil Shelley at oldfootballshirts.com.
Thanks, Phil.
And he hasn't actually given us the shirt of the week this year. He's given us a shirt of the year. Oh. So I'm just passing this one over to Andy, if you can describe that for me.
No,
I'm not sure I can.
Okay,
it looks slightly hieroglyphical. It looks like the inside.
It's Mexican, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks like something from an Aztec temple.
I can tell you that Phil now actually owns this shirt.
Okay, and is he going to wear it in public?
It is.
It looks like his face, to be honest.
It's got a massive sort of black sort of symbol. Look, kind of looks like a bear or lion type symbol in the middle. And then we have lots of other sort of...
That looks like a creature from Space Invaders.
We've got a lot of other hieroglyphics, various religious symbols.
In short, no, we can't describe it.
It's really...
Is that gold? Gold colour?
That's gold, yeah. We've got a hand with blood coming out of it. We've got a big...
I hope that's Phil's.
We've got a sword... and a Nike swoosh. Fantastic. I don't know what that's doing on there.
I know. Okay, so what's Phil said about this?
Okay, Phil has said, well, this is my shirt of the year. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Actually, it's actually really nice. It's a bit surfer dude-ish.
He said, it's a Nike shirt and not a template in sight. Which is what we all know is one of Phil's bugbears. Yeah. This is the 2016 home shirt of Club Universidad Nacional of the Mexican Liga MX, which is their top division. The team are known most commonly as the Pumas and are one of the most popular clubs in Mexico.
Bear.
The Puma emblem across the front of the shirt has featured since the 1980 season and it has been there ever since. They play at the Estadio Olímpico Universitario with a capacity of 52,000. And their stadium is within the University City of Mexico City and hosted the World Cup matches in 1986 and was the main venue for the 1968 Summer Olympics. Seeing as we're talking about 2016, the Pumas finished 6th in the combined Clausura 2016. They have loads of weird leagues over there, don't they? They start and end at different times. And just missed out on qualification for the South American club tournaments. And with that shirt, they should really have done better. So basically, there's no transfers, and I have got a load of sponsors on the back of that shirt, which Phil will put up on the...
I love the fact that Marcus turns the piece of paper over to look at the back.
No, they don't.
It's blank. That is... So did you say it's the home shirt, AD?
That is the home shirt, right.
So Puma and Nike on the same shirt?
The way, so you did there. Right, we finished that previous part with the number of leading goal scorers. So I think in that case, we'll have another stat. There's the leading assists. Ooh. Now, I'm actually going to put this one out to the panel here in front of me. I know that you know the leading answer, AD. So let's ask Andy and Marcus, who was the leading assistist?
Assistist. That's a good question. Stevens.
Right. I give the points here to my learned long-haired friend here. It's Yuri Skalak, but actually by quite a distance. It's 10 assists.
Wow.
Five last season, five this season. Who's next?
Knockout.
It is indeed Knockout. 6 the first part of the year. 1, just the whole 1. I think he did actually put the corner in for Reading to score with an own goal, but as I understand it, assists there don't count for an own goal. Oh, okay. So,
well, that goal was actually given to Bulldog, so in the end.
If it was given to Bulldog, then Knockout's got the assist, but if it was an own goal, then... So, okay, that's probably where the controversy lies. Further down the list, we've got Baldock with 5, yeah. Kyle with 5, Bong with 4, and that's all...
Yeah, actually, Bong's really... You know, when he gets down that wing, and those crosses of Bong's are really quite, you know...
Absolutely.
Good,
so the point is that it's evident that probably you could argue that Skalak and Knockout are the sort of... Not necessarily the first choice wingers. Knockout obviously is. Yeah. And then you've got a choice of Scalac, Murphy and now March as who the separate wingers are. But it's nice to know the top two wingers are the top two assists. You said Dale Stevens, his grand total this year is two. matched by Glenn Murray.
His assist for Bulldogs goal the other day, though.
Whew. Yeah, that was his first one this year. So yes, the top assistist by a reasonable street is Yuri Scanlack with 10.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay, so we move on into May, and which, as we know, is the final month of last season, and we were a point below the leaders Borough and level on goal difference in second with Burnley. Playoff contenders Derby visited the Amex, but we could only draw, which meant we had to go to Borough on the final day, needing to win. Enter Mike Dean.
I really wish it was exit Mike Dean.
So it was the playoffs it was, and to Wednesday we went in what was their biggest game in 20 years, when it wasn't even our biggest game that week.
Yeah, very true.
Okay,
very
so true. Without swearing, a very quick appraisal of Mike Dean and his decision.
It's just risible.
Yeah,
he should be hounded out of football.
I've watched it over and over again.
The thing is with him though, it's not isolated though. He just makes these really odd decisions all in every game he does. It seems.
What is particularly reprehensible about it was that he had pulled out the yellow card and then Ramirez knocks the card out. And then he gets surrounded by all the Borough players and then he changes his mind to a red. But as soon as he sees the cut on the guy's leg, which is basically the result of a collision. I mean, Stevens went for the ball, won it, and the other guy basically charges into Stevens.
Were you up at Borough that day?
Yeah.
Could you see at that time what was going on?
Did not look. The only thing was about 2 or 3 minutes before, Stevens and Ramirez were having a little bit of argy bargy, and I wonder if he might have thought that was like a continuation of it when actually it wasn't, but it didn't even look like a foul in real time. Well, when the red card came out, we were astonished.
Well, let's look at this in microcosm then. Ramirez was wearing a 4-year-old's shin pads. Which, if he was wearing adult size chin pads, A, there would be no gash, and we would be probably having a very different conversation. Mm. Secondly, he knocks the card out of the ref's hand and faced no sanction for that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Stevens, who won a 50-50 ball cleanly, and was our best player in that game by a country mile,
he had just
got the equaliser and was looking hungry for more. We don't know, because what would have happened, it might have fizzled out to be a draw as it was in the end anyway, but I think with Stevens on the pitch we'd have a better chance of getting out of there.
You could feel the momentum change in the stadium when we equalised, because basically we were like bombarded for the opening 50 minutes. The atmosphere in the stadium was absolutely incredible. The Middlesbrough fans were incredibly loud. We could barely get a word in edgeways. Terrific atmosphere from them. There was a big momentum. They carried it on. Their team basically steamrolled us for 50 minutes. But we hung in there, and then we got the goal back. Mm. And then suddenly the mood did change on the pitch. We started to move forward a bit more, and we started to believe. And we thought, we just need one more goal, and we're there. And they kind of knew
the house of cards, maybe.
Well, because they knew that if they were sort of split between getting another one themselves or holding on to the 1-1, which would have seen them through. So the momentum, we'd finally got a foothold in that game where we were previously not doing that well, and the sending off just took the air out of us completely.
All I would say is that with the nature of promotion and us doing really well and so many people, and I think Chris Hughton has kind of intimated this as well, is that it's a season where we punched above our weight. He felt it wasn't a squad that was, he hasn't said as much, but he hadn't finished assembling the squad that he felt was actually going to be the ones that were going to go up. The fact that we got that close is actually an amazing testimony to the fact that I think the sum of the parts was, whatever it is that we were bigger than the sum of the parts. And how brilliantly we did, and 89 points and plus diddle goal difference and so on and so forth. But when you look at how we've then carried on and are looking more comfortable, in the position that we're in, we haven't been outside the top four for ages. We're, you know, fighting with Newcastle, way ahead of whoever is in third place. It's clear we've got a better squad, even if largely the first 11. But we said there's so much on the show last year. Yes, we're doing brilliantly. Yes, we're challengers. Yes, playoffs would be great. But I still don't think we're ready. Whereas now, I think we're ready.
Well, we had the brilliant Malcolm Stewart on the show last week, and he was saying that was one of his concerns about having that hangover from last season coming over to this year. And it certainly hasn't improved. We'll come on to that in a bit. But back to the show with Malcolm is still in our archive.
Absolutely.
Obviously all know what happened, but there was the injury meltdown in the playoffs at Wednesday.
That was outrageous.
God, that was terrible.
That was outrageous. Four in the space of 20 minutes.
What was happening?
It just broke down. But it's also indicative of the fact that so many of our best players were, you can argue, overused. You'd like to think that they're all good enough and fit enough for 46 games, but one of the things, the reasons we believed that we had our blip, our meltdown at the halfway point, was because Stevens and Kyle were basically running the division on their own.
That's where the sending off is annoying, because if Stevens was playing in that game, that would have been one less person going off injured.
What I mean is that now we have Norwood and Sidwell, who are decent deputies.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Stevens and Kyle had to carry an awful lot, and you could see that they were all right. They got reinvigorated, but they were carrying an awful lot.
No, that was definitely a major factor in the way that last season ended up. We had so many injuries, and at the time we didn't really have the big bucks to bring the players in, so we had like a threadbare squad, and the first 11 was doing really well, but it was the same 11 week in, week out, and they were just knackered at December, January. They hit a wall and lost a few games, and then in the Wednesday game they all broke down again.
Right, so the stats
the stats in a bit. But the next bit I've got here, which we're going to come on to people's moment of the calendar year very shortly. And this was certainly one that's come up a lot, which was the fantastic Amex atmosphere in the second leg of the playoff.
That was noisy.
That was
proper loud.
That was
who
brilliant.
Won? The Middlesbrough fans making their noise or us making our noise? And bearing in mind theirs is a bigger ground, so.
I'm going to say ours
because I'm a homer. But I'm going to say ours because I'm a homer. But it was a brilliant atmosphere for that Wednesday game, and I thought we produced an atmosphere every bit as intimidating as Wednesday did in their home leg, and Middlesbrough did in their home match.
The Wednesday home atmosphere was nothing compared to Boroughs, though. I mean, they were, Andy was right, they were bang up for it, but I didn't think much of the cauldron of noise that is supposed to be Hillsborough, allegedly.
Okay, so we finished level on 89 points with Boroughs, who went up on goal difference, and Burnley were champions on 93 points. Our final goal difference was plus 30.
Right. So I do need to say these ones in that case, and this is the stats for the first half of the year, because we're doing 2016 rather than the season itself. So we played 22 matches from January to, and this is not the playoffs as well. This is just the league matches. Won 13, drew 6. Lost 3, and that would be Wolves, Rotherham and Cardiff. Scored 41 in 22, not bad. Conceded 18, points 45. So for those last 23, so for the 22 matches, we had a goal difference of plus 23. Did you say we finished on plus 30?
Plus 30, yeah.
Plus 30. Let that be a lesson to actually starting your season well. Because, at that point we had plus 7 and we were chasing. Okay. All right, we can, like I say, so easy to be wise afterwards, but before the end of the show, I want to do all the stats for the rest of the year, because, like I said, I think there's some records there that are broken.
Okay. And just before we move on from May, obviously we say goodbye to Inigo Calderon, which was obviously... Okay, July. the close season was all about keeping hold of our assets, with the club fending off big offers from Knockhart, Stevens and Dunk, which was massive. The other big news, of course, was the signing of Glenn Murray on loan for the season. So we have Murray in, Sidwell in, Stevens in, Zamora retired. Goodbye to Danny Holler, Calday and Cross, and JFC went out on loan with a load of other.
But that's not a massive turnaround, is it? I mean, it's a tweaking of the squad, and the fact that he was actually able to keep the spine of the squad together.
which was most important for
yes.
this year.
I mean, all right, Stevens might have had his strop, might have had his huff, and I think it probably did affect the first few games of
it
the
did.
Season.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of his quality and his contribution.
If he was playing against Newcastle, he would have got something out of that game.
Exactly.
I'm still
convinced
of that
now. Or the Stevens that we know.
Yes, yeah. Sorry, yes.
I know
yes,
he was carrying yes. a bit of an injury pre-season, yeah. but even so, there's possibly an injury of the head as well.
But, okay, well, into August then. As we mentioned earlier, there, the worry was that there would be a hangover from last season. We started off with a 0-0 stalemate at the much-fancied Derby. We then sailed through two rounds of the League Cup. Forest and Rotherham were seen off 3-0. We got a point at Reading and we got beat at Newcastle. Oh, and Elvis scored a goal.
Yeah, someone predicted that in their
scored,
random prediction.
He scored two, didn't he?
He scored two in the League Cup, yeah.
He scored two in that
yeah,
league.
Yeah, but we're
only
talking August here. So,
oh, of course,
yeah. So, well, the thing is, I mean, we're talking about the League Cup as actually additionals to, you know, appearances and goals and what have you, because let's face it, we did nothing in the FA Cup, did we? Back in, was that our second game of the year?
Yeah, it was a bit part of a side up at Hull.
Piers
yeah.
went to that, and it was basically, he said that both teams quite clearly didn't want to win because, you know, Hull were in the promotion mix
sure,
as well.
Yeah.
And it was literally, as soon as the Hull goal went in, it was almost like we right. shake hands and we take going out, and yeah. it, almost Steve Bruce's face was just, oh no, another game. So, and when Cross hit the bar, I think, in the last minute,
yeah.
everybody was just like,
stop
no.
it, no. Stop, don't do that again.
What are you playing?
Yeah, again. So we'll just rattle through this one because we're pretty much up to speed on this
sure,
here. Really.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously we did the League Cup game where we got to change ends at half time. That was good. Murray was up and running. I mean, having Glenn Murray back was a massive, massive thing.
It is a huge thing. I mean, look, we had Zamora back. That was fine, great. But you could tell that the writing was on the wall. And I didn't realise he finished as early as January.
He did play on. For a few more months, we didn't actually find the back of the net.
Right, okay, but you know, we didn't get a full. The fact that we got anything out of Zamora, it was a great thing. But Glenn Murray, sorry, you know, I probably have a lot more time for Gus Poyet than others do, but this is one that he got catastrophically wrong. Offloading him to, well, he didn't offload him to Palace. He just offloaded him, and Palace took him up.
Well, yeah. and
that's what hurts.
It was yeah. it was a very, very small differential in wages. It's just the fact that Gus didn't want him.
Yes, yeah. and preferred CMS, which is fine. But for the way that Gus was setting up,
well, Gus, it wasn't Gus, for CMS. Yeah, the irony is,
Glenn
Murray and
ideal.
CMS together would have been.
I was about to say CMS would actually probably suit Houghton's style actually brilliantly now, and actually
he would be, yeah.
And is a more of a kind of bulldog type player,
yeah.
That we think we need. Now, maybe we need, I mean, in which case you think, what the hell is he doing at Luton?
Yeah.
You know,
he's
so.
Not even playing there either. But then,
oh, crikey,
okay, so
no is the answer. I wouldn't
so
have him back.
I've got Elvis scored a goal, changing ends at half time. Murray up and running. Elvis scored again. We signed Shane Duffy.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Bearing in mind his start to the season, he loves to score against Blackburn, doesn't he?
Even when he's playing.
Speaking of Blackburn fans, he was quite clearly engineering a move. I think.
Oh, really?
knew about the mid. Yeah.
Look, you carry on this. You carry this. I'm going to Brighton. If you carry this, I'm going to score more on goals.
Exactly.
I've no idea what part of Ireland he's from, so I apologise if I've offended him.
It just goes to show, though, that this is a really bad side to get injured in, because normally the person that we bring in to replace you whilst you're recovering turns out to be so good.
Yes.
You ain't getting back in the team, sunshine.
Well, that's what happened with Gordon Greer last year, yeah. when Goldson
absolutely.
Came back in, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And actually, to a point, it's a shame. Poco with Bong. He played his couple of games really well. I was actually quite surprised when Bong got his place back.
So was I.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Rossini got crocked by Camorgan at Reading. And we haven't seen him. Well, Al has. apparently.
Yeah.
You might have mentioned that
already. He actually refuses to condemn him. Or rather, he refused to condemn him by saying, I would never do that to someone else.
Yeah.
Actually, on balance, that's quite a common condemnation, isn't it?
And then we lost at Newcastle, and we ended the month 8th on 8 points.
Did we lose against Newcastle again?
Only once. Okay, so moment of 2016. Some people have said it was... Rossini's chin up thing at Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah,
come
good.
On, we can do this. Obviously, Steve Sidwell holding the shirt after his wonder goal. What was your moment?
Mine would have been actually Dale Stevens' equaliser against Borough, because for that moment between him scoring and that sending off, I was convinced we were going up because, right, as Andy said, we were going to win that game.
The tide was turning that day.
I'm absolutely convinced. Andy's absolutely right. We had the momentum. Mm. They were misplacing passes. Did they go for the second goal? Did they hang on for the, you know, for that 5 minute spell?
They pumped the
bus,
didn't they? Yeah.
We would have won that. I mean, you know, if buts, ands, maybes, if McGranny had balls, etc. But for me, that was when I thought we were going up, and then obviously summing up our season. Then,
so your moment of the year was destroyed 2 minutes later.
Yeah, basically. for that moment, we were in the Premier League. I'm convinced of that.
Sure, Andy.
Again, so many to choose from, but I think I am going to go for Murray's winner at Birmingham just a couple of weeks ago. I just think those are the goals that teams that get promoted score, and those are the goals that the other teams don't, and that's why we're going up and they're not.
Mm. See, I'm surprised no one's done this yet, but I mean, that was a game you just want Barry Davis commentating on. Just look at his face. Just look at his.
Well, Palace fans will say he never ran 90 yards.
I'm not sure he ever ran 90 yards. Never ran 90 yards during a whole game. Okay.
Well, the one that, what, the moment.
What's yours then, mate?
Good question.
I'm going to say, and it's not necessarily a positive one, is the reaction of the players after the Sheffield Wednesday playoff.
Yes, that was definitely a moment.
It was a moment. And it's, you know, it's, it's them who are crushed. They're on the ground. Few of them are in tears. We, on the other hand, are applauding with such pride. And you've got this kind of perverse other way around. Normally, the Sky cameras like to pick on some kid grizzling, don't they?
Yeah.
They've got the players doing that. We are bursting with pride.
Okay, let's move on to September then. September got off to the worst possible start, losing a rare home game to Brentford. Usual service was resumed there with wins over Huddersfield, Burton and Barnsley, and a 0-0 stalemate at Ipswich. We also exited the League Cup. So, a rare home hiccup?
What one? Brentford. Brentford were very... We were poor, they were good. That's what happens. Yeah. Move on.
Yeah.
Okay. We got lucky against Huddersfield.
Yes. Tough. That's what happens. As well, this is it. I mean, this is Andy said just now. That's what happens for teams that are going up. You get the luck.
Yeah.
It does it even itself out? No.
And
no.
It was another month of last minute goals. Last minute against Huddersfield. Last minute against Burton.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I refer myself to Mr. Bass from 2 minutes ago. That's what happens to teams that are going up.
It was a really dour game. Burton defended really well. Burton defended really well in that game. And actually, you know, we didn't look massively better than them, even though we dominated the possession. But we just found a way. We just knew. We kept running in there. And ultimately, you know, I think it was... Scalak just got in there, just too quick for the defender, and he just tripped him up. That's just it.
Okay, October started with a first ever win at Hillsborough after 102 years of play.
About time.
This was followed by being held at home by Preston and wins by a single goal against Wolves and Wigan before the 5-0 dismantling of Norwich, which is another one of people's moments of the year.
Okay,
so revenge at Hillsborough.
About time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely about time.
Plus,
how many
plus
years did you say, 80? 102?
102,
yeah.
Plus knockouts, poking of tongue when he scored.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, crocked him, didn't they? Well, actually, no, they didn't croc him. No, it wasn't. No, they didn't crock him. They laughed. They booed him when he went
right,
off. That was
did.
It. Yeah.
But, I mean, the month was all about that thrashing of Norwich, wasn't it?
What a match. Absolutely. It was not how I expected the game to turn out. I thought it would actually be quite, you know, I associate Norwich with decent football. And they came out to try and bully us. And we just said, well, we're not having that.
So we bullied them.
And we got stuck into them. They didn't like it. They had a poor attitude. I thought Norwich, mentally, they weren't really at the races. And one of my favourite goals, even though technically not a brilliant goal, I saw the way that Murray just shoulder charged the keeper off the ball and then just hit it into the net.
And he nearly missed it.
The post to go in.
Yeah.
But I just love the cheekiness of that goal and the fact that he just went in, follow through, proper centre forward.
And it was like a
header when Murray ran in, just sort of literally last
timed.
Minute perfectly.
Scalak
timed.
With the perfect cross. And he's so good at
cross.
That. Yeah.
But the good thing is about the Norwich manager, Alex Neil, we know how Brighton play, they're one dimensional, blah de blah. Have that, mate.
No, let's just put that up on the wall.
Shades of Gary Johnson at Peterborough, isn't it?
We only got a few minutes left. We better just whiz through this. So we ended the month second on 31 points, 3 behind Newcastle and a goal difference of plus 14. November, only three games in November, but the main news was Anthony Knockhart lost his father and the subsequent goal celebration at Bristol City. Mm-hmm. The other two games saw us draw at home to Villa and beat Fulham. So the Knockhart effect.
Absolutely. I mean, even when he's not playing, he has an effect on those players. And it's actually once again highlighting the togetherness of the squad. They are playing for their mate. They are thinking of him. Well, they're thinking of him when they get the right moment. That's how professional this current squad is.
Going over to the funeral, I think, spoke volumes for the whole squad.
I think a couple of them
together.
Were due to go over, and the rest of them said, well, we're not on internet, can we go? And well, it was a dozen of them went over.
Yeah. Well, it was tantamount for me that, obviously, the season before we had the hashtag One Club, One Ambition, and then last season we had the hashtag Together thing, but I haven't actually changed it for this year, and that will now stay.
I think so, yeah. I'd say the Brighton and Hove Together Albion. That was
also, when the team run over and picked up Knockhart's shirt from the thing, Knockhart shirt after Sidwell's goal, A, it was an amazing goal, and B, then the team all did that together, and I just think you could probably tell Bristol City thinking, oh, we ain't going to beat this team today, no chance.
Okay, and then so we ended the month. Oh, we've done that, haven't I? We started December with a draw at Cardiff before wins against Leeds, Blackburn and Birmingham and QPR, and then of course last night
okay we're running out of time, so I've got to do the stats of the year. Second part of the year, i.e. first part of the season. 15 wins, 6 draws, 2 defeats, 38 goals, 14 against, 51 points. So the calendar year, 28 wins, 12 draws, 5 defeats. Therein lies 2 club records. 1, the most wins in a calendar year, 28, beating the previous best of 27 in 2011. But that 2011, there was 50 matches that year because there've been some cancellations and so 28 wins is the most in a calendar year, I believe. 5 defeats is the fewest in any given calendar year, beating the previous best of 2001, where there was 7 defeats. I'd actually earlier put there was 10 in 78. There's actually 10 in 2000, 10 in 1978, but there was 7 in 2001. We've beaten that by 5, by having just 5 this year. And also the 32 goals we conceded is the fewest we've ever conceded in a calendar year, beating the previous best of 33 in 2010. But again, that was only because we played 42 games, because some games have been... We played 45 games this year, but with... So that's the records are most wins, fewest defeats, fewest goals conceded. I also believe, and I haven't gone through the entire years, but we've also got, I believe, the most number of clean sheets this year, 24.
We are top, on that. Yeah. I mean, there was that Sky graphic which we'll put up on our Facebook.
And the last one I would say is, and I believe this is a record too, is the highest, and we've got to say official, average attendance. Is 26,903. Again, I believe a club record.
Okay, we are running out of time. So on the poll for your player of 16, it's pretty much between two players, and it's and the casting vote will actually be in the room. It's that close. So, Marcus, who was your player of the calendar year?
Player of the calendar year, Lewis Dunk. There you go.
Okay. Andy Bass, your
Lewis Dunk.
Alan Wurz.
Lewis Dunk.
Well, I'm going to say Anthony Knockhart just because no one else did. Because Dunk's won it now.
Yes, absolutely. He's
a 10 from Len.
Yes. Well, he finished last year. Finished last year. He was still playing with the rage. He got sent off at QPR, playing with the red mist. Although, perversely, he's now got more yellow cards. He's playing like a proper, a Premier League player in waiting.
A random prediction for the Albion at the beginning of the season: Lewis Dunk won't get sent off this season. So far, so good.
Okay.
But that is actually all we've got time for this week. So thank you to, of course, Marcus Hancock, to Andy Bass, and to Alan Wares. Happy New Year from myself and Alan and the gang here. It's been a brilliant first half of the season, but hey, we're only halfway there.